When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $75,000 a year. Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses like you. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day to day, all for just $99 a month. That's month to month, no hidden fees, and you can cancel at any time. Go to Bambee.com/scale right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/scale. Spelled BAM to the BEE.com/scale.
Welcome back to the Uncharted Podcast. I have my co-host and good friend, Robbie Allen. And the reason we're going to interview Robbie today, he recently got promoted. Congrats, Robbie. Stoked for you, thrilled for you. And one of the things I've admired about Robbie is I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years. He actually interviewed me a couple of years ago when he was running sales for MixMax. Then we worked together and competed against each other at Saster and became really, really good friends. And then I've seen him develop into one of the best revenue leaders I can think of over the last couple of years. So congrats on going from SDR to CRO in a decade or so. So Robbie, give us a little bit context really, really quickly for the audience of like your resume, like really, really quickly, how you got into tech sales, the different jobs you did, the pluses, the minuses, what you learned at each one. Let's try doing that in less than like 60 seconds.
Okay, perfect. Well, there's a fire truck driving by, which I think is a little ominous about my career. So 60 seconds or less, let's see. Honestly, like nothing on paper that I think would tell you that this was an especially standout individual. I was not an A-plus student. I went to the University of Oregon and, you know, great college, amazing experience, was not, you know, necessarily the same level of competition to get into as a, you know, an Ivy League or something like that. I think where I had a lot of experience was honestly just like kind of street smarts, like growing up in the city and working with people and finding ways to make money as I was growing up and being creative. I took a job as an SDR in my first job out of college. I did pretty well at it. It was pure outbound for a startup. So, you know, zero structure, reporting to the VP of sales, had to figure it out on my own, moved into an AE role. I remember I went on a camping trip with my girlfriend at the time, now a wife, to celebrate, came back out from Big Sur, turned my cell phone on, and found out the entire office had been laid off. So within 18 months of getting my career started, I'd been fired, or laid off, I guess, is the more polite way of saying that in corporate speak. But that opened the door to Zenefits. And at Zenefits, I got to build out this really big sales team and make the jump into leadership and hire 250 SDRs and do a massive deep dive on scaling companies. And you know, then after that Zenefits experience, I had to lay off 200 people. And that was really hard. And I was like, you know, I felt like I was kind of getting knocked off this peg. I went on to a couple other companies and you know, those companies were mixed success. You know, Flexport was a really fast growing experience where I got to work internationally. And then I took an early stage head of sales job and figured out pretty quickly, like that it just wasn't set up to succeed, at least for me at that moment in time, and moved on. And, you know, that was a year on the resume. And so all of a sudden I was looking down the barrel of a bunch of short stints, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 years working at various companies. And I think, you know, there were a lot of lessons and learnings and takeaways, but I think, you know, when I think about what got me to the CRO role that I'm in today, it wasn't just a straight linear path of wins. It was a lot of turbulence and lessons along the way. And I hope that some of those, I guess, can be, you know, can be shared with others so they don't necessarily have to make the same mistakes that I did along the way.
Love it. So look, you've had a couple of, it's kind of funny. If there's one way I can explain your story, it's you've been on this fucking roller coaster, ups, downs, the roller coaster goes off the rails, right? For good or bad. And that a lot of it has nothing to do with you. It's like the something happens, the rail goes off, right? The wheel comes off. Like, it has nothing to do with Robbie. So I guess the question I'm trying to ask, looking back, if there are three things you could control, or if someone's listening to this and they're like, hey, if I could go back and tell my younger self, these are the three things I can control that I have control about, that no investor, no market, no external forces contribute to, like, what do you think those three things are that the average person can, like, literally double down on and increase their chances of landing where you are?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a good question. I think there's, as I look back on the things that, you know, I did well and I do again versus some of the things I think I did differently, maybe a couple things that stood out. The first one was that I was always compelled to build relationships at companies I worked for with people I admired. So the people in the business, leaders, ICs, whomever, who I was drawn to and had admiration for. And that was typically, you know, partly because of the way they worked and the work they produced, but also because of the way they carried themselves and led by example and inspired others. And I found that coming out of each of these experiences I've had throughout my career, really the most valuable thing for me, for better or for worse, it hasn't been the equity, it hasn't been, you know, whatever the W-2 was or anything like that. It's been the relationships that I've built along the way, and you carry those with you. And I think, Poya, you've always done such a good job at this, and it's the lesson I keep learning. And so a great example of that is, you know, at Zenefits, I really admired our head of sales ops, this guy Niji, who came in from LinkedIn, and he just brought a ton of rigor and process and vision to otherwise a pretty chaotic kind of Wild West sales environment that was working, but as we scaled, just needed more parameters and sort of scalable infrastructure. And Niji's the CEO of the company I work for today. And there's a big story in between all of that, but, you know, the bottom line was, this is somebody who I valued the relationship and maintained it over time. And as a result of that, you know, I now work for Niji as he's the CEO of Agent Sync, and we've got that inherent trust and relationship. And I've seen a couple examples of that through my career. So I think on the understanding that the relationships that you build at the company you're working for today will serve you for the rest of your career, and going out of your way to build the relationships with people you admire and telling them you admire them and why you admire them, I think is one of the keys. You know, I think beyond that, you talk about in sales doing a postmortem on a deal. I think doing a postmortem on your employment experience for any role you're in, that can be like at the end of when you're, call it an SDR, moving into an AE at the same company, or that can be when you're moving on from the company to go do your next thing. I think that doing a postmortem on all the really the core lessons you learned is like a really good way to crystallize what those things were. And one of the things I did, both coming out of Zenefits and Flexport, was I just did like a blog post on LinkedIn of here were the things I learned like along the way. These are the things I would do again. These were some of the things I wouldn't do again. And I've kind of built those into my personal playbook of, you know, what I'm good at. And, you know, that's everything from how I interview and what I look for in sales reps to how I evaluate companies and like what are the most important things that matter to me when I think about joining an early stage startup, because you're not going to be able to know everything. You got to pick your spots, and, you know, startups are evolving, you know, every single day. And so you have to be okay with a certain amount of risk, but you also have to know the things that like you need to know. And so for me, that was enterprise traction, like understanding that there was actual enterprise kind of like customer readiness. That was a big thing when I was looking for my next play. Trust with the founders, and or at least the executive team at a minimum, and people I'd be working for, and an environment where I really feel like I could win. You know, and I think that means something for me personally, because I know what my skills are. But, you know, it's no fun to go into an environment where you're not set up to succeed. And I think you have to be really honest with yourself about what that looks like. So, you know, those would be a couple of things I would look at to like evaluate a company on. So, you know, again, learning lessons along the way by sort of hitting pause and sort of crystallizing your thoughts. Going out of your way to, you know, build relationships with the people you admire. Maybe I'll just leave it at two. Do you think I need a third?
I think two is more than enough. So let's dive a little deeper. Now that you're a CRO, and this isn't your first VP of sales gig. So One of the questions I love asking founders is what gets easier the second time around, right? Mm. So you did the VP of sales role at Mixmax, right? You had the outbound background, you had done some closing. What do you think got better, or how do you think, like, what changed and what changed the second time around for good or bad? I would love to know the pros and the cons, and let's just start there.
Yeah. So I think it's probably good to understand like what didn't go well the first time, right? And how you crystallize those lessons. When I look back at a, you know, prior role I had as a VP of sales that I would sort of classify as not working out, at least the way I was expecting it was going to, was kind of two management failures that ultimately fell on mine and my shoulders, right? One of those was understanding and stress testing the relationship that you have with the CEO from day one and making sure it's something you feel like can scale for years and years to come. And in my case, it was working with somebody who I have a lot of admiration and respect for, but ultimately was much more technically oriented and didn't have experience kind of on the commercial side of the business. It was taking a fully self-serve product to be kind of sales led for the first time. And I was the only sort of commercial person in the business. And that was hard for me. I didn't feel like there were people, you know, across the aisle who I could work on building a go-to-market motion with. I felt like I was doing it all on my own and it was creating some friction. The other part of it is just a relentless commitment to A player talent. And I think everybody talks about this, but at the end of the day, if you're in a leadership role, one of the hard things about scaling sales is that there aren't really such thing, at least on paper, as, you know, this notion of a 10x engineer. There's no real like 10x salesperson, meaning like it's very rare that you're going to get a salesperson who does 10x the level of quota retirement that another rep at replacement cost will do. And so what that means in practice is like you have to hire people to scale. Like if you're scaling your business, you have to hire quota capacity in and do it incrementally one by one by one and be able to prove that you can support and ramp those reps. And what I've learned over and over again is that you can greatly increase the odds of those reps succeeding by being relentless about recruiting and finding the very best people in your market and orienting the program around A players working there and advertising that and celebrating that and making it something that people are proud to be a part of, which easier said than done in an early stage environment where there's a very competitive recruiting market right now. So those would be like the two things that stand out to me are just the stress testing the relationship with like the key people you're working with early on and even potentially consulting for a little while to feel that out and make sure it's something that everybody's on board with. And then two would be just, again, what gets easier is understanding that half my time needs to be spent recruiting and working on everything that has to do with kind of recruiting and talent management and all that stuff.
And then I got to ask you this. So in between the two gigs, right, you did a little consulting, right?
Right.
You consulted, we sold event sponsorships at Saster.
We did.
And Robbie was consistently number one, number two out of two people, but like it was a lot of logos that you brought on. So going into AgentSync, how was that transition from like being a consultant to like a full-time? What helped you adjust? And how do you think the consulting, whether it's Saster or some of the other gigs you did, helped you in your full-time role?
Yeah, you know, I'll start by just saying how grateful I am for the experience working with you, working with Jason Lemkin, working with Brendan Cassidy, and just like what we were all able to do together and the whole team at Saster. I was a little bit low after that last VP of sales experience. And I would say my confidence, which, you know, I think we underrate how important, especially in sales, confidence is. My confidence was not as high, I think, as it needed to be leaving that last role in order to be successful in the next one. And so what consulting did for me was it helped me get my mojo back. You know, I put away $6-7 million in sponsorship sales over a couple years and closed a lot of, you know, mid to large size deals and also, you know, managed a couple of other client engagements outside of the Saster world and, you know, managed those deals myself and closed them and built relationships with founders. And kind of what I found by that is like, I can do it. You know, I can do anything I set my mind to. It's about picking your spots correctly where you feel like you've got the best odds to succeed, you know, looking at it through through the different lenses that you have to look at it through. You know, what Saster and the rest of the consulting experience I did over those 2.5 years provided me was the opportunity to bet on myself and prove it and you know, make really good money and do all these great things that ultimately just led to me building up my confidence. And I realized at the end of that, that I wanted to get back into the seat and build a team. That's the thing that gives me energy is team building and ultimately like the belief to the core of me that sales is a team sport. And I grew up playing team sports my whole life and really believe in that. And, you know, what the consulting thing did for me was give me the opportunity to put a bunch of wins on the board with a small group of people who really believed in me. And I think that, you know, in a leadership role, it can be lonely. And there's a lot to be said for going and working with people you know and trust and just putting a bunch of wins on the board and getting your groove back. And I'm very grateful and recognize that that experience was somewhat unique to me and my circumstances and the opportunity that came my way. But I encourage anybody who's in between things and feeling, you know, less than 100% on their confidence level to find something like that, even if it's part-time or more short-term. And I think there's a lot of opportunity out there to help work with teams in a non-full-time capacity and especially finding ways to do that with people you know.
Yeah, 100%. So now let's talk about the CRO role, right? So was that something you had discussed in the interview process? Like when did it become like Robbie's goal to go for that? And when was that discussed as part of the process?
Yeah, that's a good question. That was something that I discussed before even joining the team as a VP of sales. And again, it was something where I felt like I needed to be really transparent about what was in it for me and what I would sort of use as my barometer of success. And that's not to say that CRO, that was a measure of success. It's a lot more about the company and scaling and where we need to go, but also what leaders we need to be in seat to get there. And my ambition to be one of those leaders on the kind of on the C-suite team. And, you know, I think it was something too, where because I'm working for somebody who I have a, you know, trust with that predates even the relationship, I was able to have that conversation in a really transparent way and feel supported. And it was something too, where, you know, I encourage folks out there that are maybe in a similar role and like a VP of sales role and are trying to bet on themselves. It's not that uncommon, right? That a CEO will top you with a CRO from the outside and kind of keep that card in the back pocket. And I think the way that we approach that conversation, and I want to be careful not to overshare here, but I think it's an important lesson for folks that are, you know, advocating for themselves is, you know, what would the stretch goal look like, you know, this year or next year? And put that down on paper. Like you have the company plan that you're trying to hit with the board, but what would like absolutely exceptional look like? Get that number down at the beginning of the year and talk about it and what it would mean to like orient all your hiring and planning and demand gen goals and everything around the stretch goal. And then ultimately like what, you know, what you might ask for in return for getting to the stretch goal over many, many years, that sort of thing. And so I encourage everybody, and I think I'm in a fortunate position where I get to have this type of conversation with the person I work for, but I encourage folks to try to have that level of conversation with their CEO or their hiring manager. Because I think when you can plan in that kind of collaborative way and make it a win-win for everybody, that's when it gets really exciting.
We'll be right back after a quick advertisement.
If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/scale. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/scale to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/scale. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Lots to unpack there. But one of the things I actually am really curious, now that you've been in the role or have worked towards the role, looking back, what do you think are some of the critical skills you need to be successful as a CRO, right? Like, what are maybe the top like five, right? Which ones did you have? Which ones did you not have? And how did you either develop the ones you didn't have, or at least like make sure you minimize your risk as much as you could?
That's a great question. You know, I think the role changes moving into a CRO role, where if you're in the deals, you know, that is typically an indication that you need to scale yourself out of all the deals. Of course, you're going to have your finger on the pulse on the key strategic deals, but you know, you need to get leaders in place that are going to be able to manage that part of the business for you, so you can place one or two bets a year, right? And so you think about what those bets might be. That might be building channel sales. It might be, you know, a big partnership opportunity. It might be moving into a new market or vertical. If you're taking five bets like that, odds are they're probably all not going to work. If you take one or two bets and you're really smart about it, you can land one or two of those and open up more total addressable market and revenue opportunity for your company. And I think that's a big part of the job, but you have to create the bandwidth for yourself to manage those bets. And the way you do that is by making sure you have a team that's in place and ready to deliver results quarter over quarter. So one of the big lessons that I've learned, and something that was a skill I would say I maybe hadn't proven, but felt I could do, was hiring people that were better than me and more senior than me to work for me and, you know, to report directly to me. And so I'm fortunate that I have two absolutely phenomenal directors of sales who, in a different life, I would report to, you know, but this was the right opportunity for them and the right timing. And they're both owning specific segments within our business and owning a lot of it, right? Hiring and the go-to-market strategy and the sales process and the forecast and all of it. And that's creating more bandwidth for me to focus on other bets that I then have to make for the business. So that's one example of something. I think another that I have learned a lot about is owning solutions consulting. So in our business, we're, you know, a technical sale to an old school enterprise market. And, you know, solutions consulting is a critical part of our sales motion. And we have solutions consulting come in and, you know, do discovery with the customer and then build out like a tailored kind of customized demo instance and work really collaboratively with the technical stakeholders on the customer side. I hadn't managed that before. And I think the challenge I had was like, how do I make these people successful when I'm not like beaming with confidence on how to do it? And I learned a lot about that. And I think, you know, one of the things I underestimated was how technical you need to be really good as a solutions consultant. And I don't consider myself somebody who is especially technical. I'm dangerous where I need to be, but you know, have learned that hiring the right leader to sort of balance the skills you don't have was really critical in that role. You know, all these lessons kind of devolve back to hiring in the end. But I think those were a couple of things that stood out. And then, you know, I think the last part is like just learning to own it the second time around, learning to own the role you're in and understand that like every conversation that you're in at work is selling the dream. And whether that is recruiting, whether that's talking to partners, to product, about the feedback we're hearing in the market, on sales calls, like you name it, you know, in team meetings, it's something where you need to be genuine, you need to be yourself, but you also need to own the role that you're in and understand that you are somebody who is a leader in the business for a reason, and that people look up to you, and that the way you show up every single day and the confidence that you express and the vision that the vision that you paint for the team, those are things that people want to hear. People want to work for visionary leaders and people that put these things out there. So if you're thinking to yourself before some big team all hands that it's going to be corny or whatever, like take a step back and like really look yourself in the mirror and understand that you're there for a reason. I think that's something too, where you can call that imposter syndrome. You can call it whatever, but I think ultimately that's been something where the second time around, I've tried my best to not let myself fall into that trap, and it happens, you know. Even being on this podcast right now, talking about all this stuff feels a little bit egotistical and all this different kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's about growing and succeeding as people, right? And we help each other by sharing the learning and insights and things that we picked up along the way. It's important to understand that when you're in this role, that's your job, and you need to do that every single day.
Own it, baby. Well, we're proud of you. What a phenomenal episode. Congrats again. It's been amazing just to watch your journey, Robbie. You already know how we end the episode. So if you could look back, and this time we're going to switch it up. Before the second run, before the second time around, right? Before joining AgentSync as a VP of sales, if you could go back to that moment in the middle of the pandemic, you're scared shitless, you're nervous, you're about to move the family to Denver, you're about to have a kid. What's the one piece of advice, personal, business, whatever it may be, if you were to go back 2 years, what would you tell yourself?
It's funny. I've asked this question so many times, I've never actually thought about my own answer. So this is off the cuff. I was chatting with a coach of mine today, and we were talking about this quote from Marianna Williamson. Marianna Williamson was one of the, I think, potentially the first female candidate to run for president of the United States, and is a writer and has this really wonderful quote. It's a long quote, but I'll abbreviate it. And the quote's basically, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. And it's actually our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. And I think, like, there's kind of this voice, right, that when you're stretching and leaning over the edge of growth, that your body and mind is triggered to pull you back into the safe, warm, dark place, and to not extend yourself in that way. And I think that it's ultimately our responsibility to ourselves to fight that and to grow. And I think that what the advice I'd maybe give back and to myself when I'm, you know, if I were a younger version of myself, would be, if you feel that voice, and you feel that presence about telling you to shrink, or that not do so much, that you're actually in the right place, that's an indication that you are, like, on the line of growing. And the more that you can spend time listening to and getting to know that voice, I think the more you can build the confidence and process within yourself to keep growing individually. And I think that's something that, if I look back on a younger version of myself, I definitely wouldn't have had that presence of mind. And it's a thing we work on every day, but I really like that quote from Marianna Williamson.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for sharing. And for basketball fans like Robbie, there's a great, great movie, Coach Carter, where that quote is multiple times said. I think the character that plays it is Timo Crew. I think his name, he goes by Cruz, but it's this player. He's a bully, and then the coach is pushing him. He quits, and then he comes back, and that's the line that he uses time after time. So my recommendation to you is go and apply for a gig at AgentSync, and the second one is watch Coach Carter. Well, with that.
Wow. Well, love it.
Well, with that, Robbie, thanks again. Congrats again. And to all the listeners, until next time, be safe, be good, and catch you on the next episode.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $75,000 a year. Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses like you. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day to day, all for just $99 a month. That's month to month, no hidden fees, and you can cancel at any time. Go to Bambee.com/scale right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/scale. Spelled BAM to the BEE.com/scale.